Item 2, the Judicial Branch Budget Educational Session on Branch Budget. Again, no action. We welcome Zlatko Theodorovic, again Kurt Soderlund, and Giselle Corey from the Office of Judicial Branch Capital Program. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Chief. So this is Kurt Soderlund again. So today's session is meant to be educational, but at a high level. We don't want to get down too far into the weeds, but basically what we want to do is provide you with tools in terms of the handouts and give you an overview of the budget process and how it all works, what are some of the pitfalls, how to understand how the documents that are utilized by the legislature, Department of Finance, and the governor's office all fit together, where to look for information on a policy perspective that occurs as we go through a fiscal year. One thing I'll mention before turning it over to Zlatko and Giselle is the fact that at any given point in time, we're really working on three budgets at any throughout the year. So one budget is the past year's budget and all the reconciling issues that go with that. The current year budget in terms of making forecasts of expenditures and revenue, and then the future budget, in this case, for now, the 13-14 fiscal year, and that deals with resources and budget change proposals and things of that nature. So that is a broad overview. We're going to try and keep this at a high level, and so I'll turn it over to Zlatko for now.
Good morning, everyone. Zlatko Theodorovic, here to talk to you about what is truly a complicated issue, but we need to work on making it something that's accessible to you at the council, try to keep the jargon to a minimum, give you this high-level perspective. But what we really need from you as we go through is don't be afraid to ask questions. What we would want is for you to ask questions now and ask questions later, but we wouldn't want you to walk away saying, boy, there's a lot of things I just didn't understand. I think we've said before, please ask us questions, and if you want to send us emails later or give us a call, you know where we are. But we really want to make this something that's accessible to you. And as Kurt said, the binder of information to you is a toolkit in many respects. There's a budget terms that we've provided, and you can look back on those if you're not quite clear. But again, we wanted to provide you all the public documents that this budget process has before you. So let me start with the annual budget process for those of you that are new to this. It's a complicated looking flow chart, but that's because there is a certain level of complexity. It's a cycle. It really never ends. Sometimes the end overlaps with the beginning of the new process. So your attachment A should show this annual budget process.
Is this in our binders?
It should be, yes.
Nope, not mine. Let's see. I don't.
I think it'd be attachment.
Attachment.
Electronically, but not in the binder.
Okay.
Oh, electronically. Thank you.
So Nancy's describing what is the status of the materials are. So the annual budget process is just a one-page sheet, and it starts with what happens in the spring and the summer with all departments in terms of their preparation and plans for the upcoming budget cycle. Departments will review their expenditure needs, develop plans for asking for new money, because the budget is what's called an incremental budget. All we do is add and subtract, unfortunately most recently subtract, on the margin. They talk about zero-based budgeting where there's an evaluation of all your budget and all your expenditures. That's not what the state does. The state just looks on the edge and says, what do we need to plus or minus, assuming that your base, all your old historical expenditures and authorities still remain. So then we as a department, as a branch, look at our needs, and we've done that to some extent, looking at some of our priorities and come forward with budget change proposals that are due to the Department of Finance in September. And those BCPs, budget change proposals, are approved by the council for submission to the Department of Finance in September. So between September and when the budget comes out in January is when the governor goes through his or her deliberative process. They have meetings with us. They have meetings internally. They're looking at the revenues. They're looking at expenditures, all for the purposes of determining what their budget picture looks like. Do they have enough money or not? So that takes a long time, and it's a really a pretty involved process of making the revenue projections and also, as I said, deliberating on any of the expenditure requests. So then you come January 10th, and the Department of Finance submits a number of products to the legislature. One of them is the actual governor's budget. Now, we have to print ours out because several years ago, the Department of Finance, in an effort to try and save money, stopped readily distributing the printed budget. And so this is printed off the web. But it's, as you can see, it's a fairly thick document. But it includes the governor's message, and it includes a bunch of detailed information about each budget. And we'll go through that later on. They also submit the actual budget bill, which I'll show you later. So there's that. Those are important documents that the Department of Finance and the governor propose in January. And so some folks will look at the budget summary and think that that's the budget because that has all the high-level numbers. And some people will think that this detail is the budget. But when you really get down to it, it's that budget law. It's the budget bill that they propose to both houses. So you can see, if you don't have it, but on our flow chart, there is this submission of the two bills to the two houses of the legislature. About a month after the budget comes out, the Legislative Analyst Office, the LAO, will come out with their reviews of the different proposals within the budget. And we've provided you this year's presentation that the LAO has done, and we'll get into that later on. So this is their take on the budget. Their sense if it's real or not, and I think you've heard recently there's been some favorable responses from the LAO, but they start to pick apart particular issues, and they make recommendations to the legislature, because coming in March through the end of June, there's going to be this deliberative process with the legislature having their hearings and making their decisions on the budget. During that period of time, the governor will also be updating revenues. It's important that they're statutorily required, the governor, to present an update at the May revision, as it's called. It is to update for caseload, population, say in the prisons, caseload and health and human services programs, average daily attendance in your education programs. And they all have, and he has to prepare and propose a budget that is balanced in light of the new revenues that are projected for the upcoming fiscal year, as well as the revised revenues for the current year. Now, there has been in the past what's called as the budget's going down, it's two channels in each house. There's a reconciliation between the houses. Well, with the recent changes to the voting requirements on the budget, this, what they call a conference committee, which reconciles the differences, has not occurred. And that was a process in which departments could really find out in the public process where their budget stood. Well, now that the process is sort of more closed doors, we don't find out about all of the types of things that the legislative committees and the Senate and the Assembly are considering. And that was, I think, one of our problems this last process, was that absent this conference committee process of airing the differences, we were sort of told after the fact what some of the budget deal issues were. And I know that's led to some of the confusion and about what we thought was included in the budget. So you come through June and the end of June, and the budget bill is signed. That law becomes, you know, the budget rules for the year. And this is what that document comes to look like. It is a very lengthy budget document. It has all of the appropriations, and we'll go through what ours looks like later on. But this is the major document. It really shows you, for the entire budget, what are all the spending. And it's a very detailed, not something accessible to most. It's something that budget wonks understand. But it really is what we refer to when we look at the budget material. And on top of that, to even get from the governor's budget here to this document, there's a whole middle step process that is even more technical, on a very old computer system that tracks all of these expenditure changes. So it is a arcane process that the Department of Finance and Legislature go through to develop this budget. And for us folks, I refer to this all the time, because if there's a change from the governor's budget to the final budget act, this is your translation document. It tells you why the change was made, who made it, and you can really understand it, what the budget means, because these are just end product numbers. This really tells you a walkthrough from what the governor proposed to what the legislature enacted and the governor signed. It also shows you all the vetoes. So then we get our budget, and what do? We have the TriCorps Budget Working Group, gets together and talks about the allocation process. And we'll talk about the types of allocations that have been done historically a bit later. So that's the process. So now we get our budget. We get our budget appropriated from the legislature, our spending limit for all of our funds. And what you have to understand is the judicial branch's budget is complicated because of these factors. It has many, many funding sources, general fund being one of them, our own revenues in our trial court trust fund. There's lots of different revenues, different monies that come into the branch for us to spend. We also have many different programs that we spend the money on. And we consider these programs the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, the trial courts, the council, and what have you. Those are all interesting and complicated expenditures. And then there are issues, the fact that we have state programs like the Supreme Court, and then we have what is termed within the budget world local assistance. It's a local program, and they count the trial court operations as a local program. And then you have construction on top of that, and that's why you have Giselle here to enlighten you in terms of the construction program. It is very complicated. Transfers in, transfers out, multiple funding sources, all the budget law. It is complicated. There are some budgets that have one source, one program, very simple. Ours, by the nature of our operations, has this level of complexity. I can understand why, you know, we're having this meeting, because we want you to understand that all these different parts all go together to make the branch's budget work.
So one thing to make clear in terms of the process and how it really works here, the budget building process under the normal circumstances occurs in the summer with submissions of budget change proposals to the Department of Finance in the fall. In September is the typical time frame. Between September and December, departments and our agency works with the Department of Finance to figure out which budget change proposals are going to go through and see the light of day. Those that see the light of day end up in the governor's proposed budget that he releases on January 10th. Now, there's several other points in the road where there are augmentations that can be made available. One is called the finance letter process, and that occurs in February. And for the branch as a whole, we did submit finance letter requests to the Department of Finance, so those are sitting with them right now. And the same evaluation process will occur between February and as we get closer to the other major activity, and that is the May revise that I think everybody's heard about. And the May revise is the process where the legislature and the administration really get down to brass tacks and talk about what's going to be put within the budget. It was during the May revise process that Zlotko was making reference to the fact that last fiscal year we more or less got shut out of that process in terms of the dialogue and the negotiations that were going back and forth between staffers within the legislature and the Department of Finance, and we hope to rectify that this time through. So then the budget is actually passed by the legislature and then adopted or signed by the governor. So that gives you a kind of an overview of those are the key points to recall.
And in the package of information that we put together, there is, from the Department of Finance's perspective, their walkthrough of the budget process. So it's the document immediately after the flow. And then we, just in case you ever wanted to spend some time in the middle of the night, you know, helping yourself go to sleep, we included from the Department of Finance the glossary of accounting and budget terms. There is a language. And when I got to the Department of Finance 15 years ago, I had to learn finance speak. And Jody and Kurt, when you sit in a meeting with the Department of Finance, the terms have to be something they understand. And if you use a term that you think you understand and it doesn't comport with what they're understanding, you could be talking about going two different ways on the same issue. So it is important that we do use the jargon of the industry in that they can be clear in what we're looking for. But this is a 25-page document that goes in to great detail about the terms that are used in budgeting and accounting. So, again, not going to go through it. It's a resource for you if we say something without defining it. An augmentation. It's an increase. It's, instead of saying a budget increase, there's a reason why they use augmentation. It's just the terminology. But, again, we wanted to be able to provide you with the resources that you can look up the terms if we didn't do a good job defining them for you. So the next item was is the governor's budget summary. And this is where the governor's high-level message is discussed.
So, again, there's something, the terminology, again, for the whole finance world is the governor's A pages. Now, the document that Zlatko has up on the podium there, that's the full budget. The A pages is just a summary that is applicable to any particular state agency or in our case, our branch. And just to give you an overview, the A pages also include the description of past, current, and future budgets and what those expenditures are going to include. It'll have discussions about major program changes. Another issue will be allocation of the revenues that are expected. There are program descriptions. Keep going through there. In the budget summary, and just give us a moment as we get through there. Yeah, keep going. And all the things that you see there is the verbiage behind the A pages. Keep going. Now, what's important about this document, when you have a chance to look at it, is one critical part of the descriptions is the fact that in the A pages, it also captures what's called the fund condition statements. Now, fund condition statements, think of it as your checkbook, and how much money do you have in the bank, and how much money are you going to expend? And they do that on a fund-by-fund basis. So that's a very important part of the budget to take a look at. There are also changes in authorized positions. So there's another document that the finance does not publish anymore, and it's called the Salaries and Wages Supplement. And so for the Salaries and Wages Supplement, for every single state agency, including CSU and the UC systems, there are identified every single position that's established, what the prior year expenditures were in terms of dollars and what's called FTEs or PYs, personnel years. There are salaries for each position without exception. And as an example for the AOC, all of us are in the Salaries and Wages Supplement. And so it gives you a voluminous amount of information in terms of what's included within the A pages. But again, those descriptions are about at 5,000 feet, and it doesn't get down to really the nitty-gritty detail that you'll find in the large document that Zlatko has pointed to several times.
In terms of the A pages, this is where the governor is going to be identifying his priorities. And within the letter that I think was the second page as Bob scrolled through in your package, it is the letter that transmits the budget to the legislature. And clearly what it says is that K-12 will receive funding increases and healthcare, federal implementation of federal healthcare reform will receive funding. And so the governor has said, these are my priority expenditures. I'm going to constrain expenditures in anywhere else in the budget. And in fact, I'm going to use those areas to help fund my budget. And that's how we saw our $200 million general fund reduction that they took through the construction program. On that particular document, there is a chart that shows what the governor proposes to, on page 3, Bob, what the budget shows for, go up to the top, shows what the education spending glide path will be for them. That they expect from fiscal year 12-13 to go from $53.5 billion by 16-17 to $64 billion. That's the governor's statement about where he wants to spend this revenue increase over the next several fiscal years. An important, important issue to understand when we're competing for resources, what it is that the governor has identified as a priority for him. Healthcare, on the next page, expanding healthcare was the other priority. And so those you can see there, just a description, and you can read it if it's your pleasure, that this is an important, important program for him to implement. So we'll be competing against education and health when we're making our ask for the branch. Now, what's important is to understand sort of where the money comes from. And on page 12, Bob, it shows where the revenues for the state general fund come from. 62% of all general fund revenues come from the personal income tax. And so when you have variability in capital gains, what are you going to have? You're going to have variability in your revenues. And so that's what was happening over in the during the fiscal crisis and the recession, is that we had capital gains down. We didn't have, you know, the gains that we were made in the middle 2000s. And so that single piece really creates a lot of volatility for our ability to be budgeted on a sort of a sound basis. Now, we did provide you now, actually do have in your possession, the pie charts. So you can put into context what where the branch falls within the grand scheme of the budget. In terms of the entire state budget of $145 billion, we're 2.1%. When you count for every fund that's spent within the state budget, but when you narrow down onto just the general fund, and this is the comment that the Chief and Judge Jarr have made, is that we're 1% of a $97 billion general fund budget. As you can see, 42% going to K-12 education. Health and Human Services getting 30% of the budget. Corrections at 9%. These are the lion's share of our general fund expenditures. And yet we, as a small share of the general fund, have taken a large hit to help the budget. In the 11-12 fiscal year, we had provided over $1 billion of solutions between taking of our construction funds and our cuts. So we, as a branch, have contributed quite a bit to helping the state solve its fiscal crisis over the past fiscal years.
Justice.
Thank you, Chief. I was just following along with this, and I was just curious on the chart that shows general fund expenditures by agency. Not the pie chart, but it sets forth that the 2012-2013, 2013-2014 lumped together as legislative, judicial, and executive. Is there any reason why those aren't broken out? Because by looking at that one line item at least, that would suggest that somewhere along the line that's gone up by almost 25%.
And the reason why that's a place where there's a number. Within that section of the budget, there are a number of other line items where they park some expenditures. And so the redevelopment agency funds, I think, are part of that number. So it's not broken out because, just for ease, they only have their standard historical sections. We then, when we make our pie charts, break ourselves out and then leave the remaining there. So I don't have the detail in terms of why that particular area went up. I mean, for our area, they added some money back because of the one-time take in 12-13, and then giving part of it back in 13-14, the $218 million. So,
thank you.
But so, like I said, we're really not a large part of the state budget when you really look at the totality of it. And we're that one penny out of nine, you know, out of all general fund expenditures, and that used to be at 2.2%. So this goes to our argument that we are becoming, you know, user funded. We, you know, have $120 million of ongoing revenues that replace the general fund cut out of fee increases. So, you know, it's really, you know, we're relying on the backs of the users as opposed to the general tax dollar to fund our operations. So next, I wanted to just comment on the section of that eight pages that is just for this now legislative, judicial, and executive section. It has that chart on the next page, Bob, that everybody hates. It's that mischaracterization of what our budget looks like. This is where the Department of Finance says, look, if you look at trial court expenditures, they've only gone down by 0.3%. To support their comment that there's been, you know, largely held harmless. When we look at the next document, you'll see that they really overstate the dollars that are available to the trial courts. They include dollars that should not be there. They include the facilities money, claiming that that's something that the trial courts have. Well, the trial courts don't spend that money. It's really not a fair comparison. But I think when the Mayor Revision came out last year, it was an analytical tool for them to help explain why they could take $540 million from the trial courts. But the real answer is not that. The cuts have been larger because we have a really narrow ability to take these cuts from the operations budget.
The other point about that is in the executive branch, when they have a facilities program, that the construction of the budget for any particular agency or State Department will have local assistance, will have your state operations portion of it. But historically, capital outlay, and here we're talking about construction, has been a separate budget. So the fact that the Department of Finance included it as part of the total was really misguided, if you will, and totally obscured the picture of how the budget is pulled together.
Not acceptable accounting practice, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. You don't commingle those funds. You don't get money to buy a brick and pay for someone to work. It just doesn't work that way.
Zlotko, perhaps we could go back, Bob, to that last, because it's more than just that. This is something that we stressed with the, thank you very much, the Open Courts Coalition folks. You just had it. There it is. It's a little hard to see for those of you who are looking at the monitors as I am, but essentially if you... go down below the heading Judicial Branch Expenditures by Program. You'll find about the fifth line down the words Facility Program, and then it's broken into subnumbers. The numbers that are parenthesized are not to be subtracted. It's an odd way for them to report dollars. Essentially, what that just means is that taking the first line, 49 million and something, if you go down to the next two lines, you'll find that the 22 and the 27 million total to 49 million. So that demystifies that, I hope. Now, reading from the 49 from left to right, you'll see that the numbers grow notably. Well, that's because our facilities program grew during that period of time. So to add facilities into operations, you're not only comparing apples and oranges, but you create a distortion going forward from 2007-08 to the current and budget years simply because our facilities expenditures have grown. So when you add those numbers into our operations dollars, they mask the reduction in operations dollars that have been afforded by the legislative and executive branches to the judicial branch. It gets worse. If you go farther down the page, you'll see on the left side a major heading, Adjustments to Trial Courts. If you move down about three lines, you'll see Reserves and Redirections. And going over to the right, you'll see the figures 402 million, and then next to it, 200 million. These are essentially dollars, which the DOF likes to use the term scored. They scored these dollars for us as additions. They don't necessarily reflect any realities whatsoever. Now, for the fiscal year 12-13, it happens that we, both by legislative means and by our own ingenuity, that is to say ingenuity largely sourced in our Fiscal Services Office and with the assistance of the Chief Administrative Officer, moved statewide funds, modernization funds, improvement funds, funds that otherwise would have been available for a variety of activities. For example, the metal detectors and things that the Security Office of Security provides come out of those common funds, and they were redirected to the trial courts, and the Budget Working Group allocated those dollars to the trial courts to offset or backfill the reductions. Well, these dollars are presented by the Department of Finance as though they have provided some relief. Well, actually, it's more just the numbers that they choose to place there as their assumptions for statewide funds that have backfilled and also reserves. So when you get down to those bottom line totals, it creates the impression that there hasn't been much of a hit to the trial courts. But when you dissect those reserves and redirections, when you dissect the facilities program dollars, the picture that emerges is considerably different. This was an exercise that we went through with the Open Courts Coalition folks with a sheet from DOF, similar to the one before you, before they met with the DOF. And they had an opportunity, therefore, to question DOF about it. That's where the real transparency of this whole problem comes. But as you know, I'm like most of you. I don't spend my evenings looking at spreadsheets like that. But it's important to understand some of those rudimentary things, because if somebody points you in the direction of that sheet of paper and you see adjusted total trial courts, you'll think, well, what's the fuss? Well, the fuss is in the details, and if you back those numbers out that have been included, then you can see the problem that we've been facing.
I would note this particular chart was an issue that was discussed at the trial court funding work group, and we prepared a different chart that tried to capture more appropriately what the change in funding has been to the trial courts. And I think there's been a recognition by the Department of Finance that there is a more accurate and fairer representation than what was presented here. So there's been progress. Unfortunately, though, this is what was printed in the A pages, and only until we get that report printed and it has our chart will there be any sort of public acknowledgement of that in anything that we could hand out and say this is a more fair representation of what's happened to the budget. Okay. Next, then, is a walkthrough of what the judicial branch's section of this large document looks like. It's overwhelming in some respects, but it is absolutely informative. It gives the reader information about the branch's budget it's the verified numbers through the Department of Finance, and we understand and take to heart the SEC recommendations of tying to these numbers, tying to printed, verified, externally verified numbers. We aren't, talking about our own version of the numbers. But this only gets printed once a year, and there are updates through the year that are even recognized through a Department of Finance process. And so what's hard is, at the May revision, a lot of the information that's included in here will, in essence, have a revision to it, but it doesn't get presented in this detail. So what is hard is someone may look at the governor's budget when we are post-May revision and say, well, this isn't what is the published numbers. And so if we provide it, how do we reconcile with what is not published by the Department of Finance? They don't go through and publish this all over again. They have their own internal numbers that we've provided to them. So that is an important issue. And I think when we talked about presenting information, there are points in time through the fiscal year where there will be some update to these numbers. So I just wanted to do that, make that point in terms of the point in time.
So just one brief note. The picture that's up on the screen shows the number 0250. So 0250 is a number that's been assigned to the branch, and 0250 will be replete through every single document that is ever processed for the judicial branch. It's similar for if it was Caltrans or Department of Water Resources. They all have their own separate and distinct number. And so if you're looking through the Internet, through some of the things that are published by the legislature or the governor's office or the Department of Finance, basically you go to 0250, and that is the brand, if you will, that's been placed upon the branch, and every single budgetary decision is going to tie back to 0250 regardless.
And let me say that I can't remember the exact year, and someone might be able to remember, but there was a time where the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, the Council, the Facility Program, and the Habeas Corpus Resource Center were a different organization code, and the trial courts were a separate one. And then I believe about 5 or 6 years ago, there was an effort to unify them all under this one number, because you used to see the different parts of the branch on different limbs, so to speak. There was an 0450 and an 0250. So there was an effort to try and bring a greater transparency. But what it did is it brought all of the information together. And I don't know if over the years that's necessarily helped or hurt, but that's why this is all presented in one fashion. Now, the budget is supposed to, as it's presented in the governor's budget, tell you the same story using a different look. They all match this same number. So as Bob goes down, you'll see total positions and expenditures, all programs right there. Those are what they call tie points. And so what it is, it's like every way in which you look at the budget has to add up to those ways. So the first way on the top, so it's a 10, 20, 30, 40, 30, 35, 45, 50. It's the way in which we spend our money by our functions. The Supreme Court, the Courts of Appeal, the Judicial Council, the Facility Program, state trial court funding, habeas corpus resource center, all the different ways in which we spend our money in total. So you'll see that's what our budget is, regardless of where it comes from. It's just our total expenditures. Then the bottom half of the page, it all those numbers below it add up to the same number, the $3.1 billion. It shows all the different funding sources we have. Therein lies part of the confusion, is that some departments have one line, general fund. Or they might have one other line for a special fund. But you can see we have a general fund appropriate, a general fund expenditure of $1.155 million.
Zlatko, excuse me, it would be helpful. A number of us are trying to follow this on online or through the website. What page are we on as far as the attachments? We were on 54 56. With the first chart.
Yeah. This is 56.
56, great. Thank you.
So now it says, how do we get our money and from what fund source? It's a general fund being a large provider of resources, but then there in the middle, the trial court trust fund. There's a and all the funds in between are the ways in which we get our money to spend it. This is a standard display for all departments. It's and all state budgets are shown in this fashion. How you spend it functionally adds up one way, all the funding sources and how it's spent another way. Next page describes the sort of legal citations, the legal authorities that we have and how we spend our money. The next section is the Department of Finance generated section called the Major Program Changes. It says, according to them, what are the major changes in the budget? And so in this case, they identify the $200 million. The first bullet talks about this $200 million transfer from the immediate and critical needs account. Obviously a major issue. Next is the Long Beach Courthouse. Major issue. The recognition of the trial court efficiencies and that inclusion in the governor's budget. But it doesn't. It's not a laundry list of all the changes. The bottom portion of this next page, though, is sort of a laundry list of all the changes to the budget that we have worked on with the Department of Finance, pluses and minuses. And they have, again, some of their own technicalities. But it all matches down to what are all the adjustments between what happened in the budget that passed in June and where their new budget is to be proposed in January. Let's go to the next couple of pages. Within the budget display can be supplemental information that the Department of Finance wants to convey to the outside world. Because in theory, this is something that's the average citizen is able to click on and walk through. I don't know how, I mean, us budget techies understand it, but I don't know why they think that this kind of display is helpful. But this is something that they asked for us to put forward. It is a breakdown of different expenditures for different areas within the trial courts. And we actually did an improvement upon this particular special display. But it was the fact that there's a lot of unidentified expenditures within the budget. Just because you see a trial court trust fund line item, there are many programs that we all know are funded out of that. The Improvement and Modernization Fund. Someone say, well, I know that we have the complex litigation program funded out of it. Where is that shown? So we try to provide this supplemental information. But let me remind you that this council publishes a number of reports that give even greater detail to this. And I will say, unfortunately, that many of them are just delivered to the legislature and folks that interact with our budget, and they don't read it. We provide a very important, a detailed expenditure report on the Improvement and Modernization Fund. And when I asked my former colleagues, you know, about the IMF, have you looked at the report? And they'll say they have it. So we're battling a little bit of there hasn't been a focus on all of the material that we provide. So when they ask, where is this information? Here it is on our website. Let's show you the link. And then they're surprised that 4 years ago, they asked us to present this, and they've forgotten about it. New staff comes in, and they don't even know that that information is there. So we're battling a little bit of lack of knowledge and understanding externally. So we're always working on that, and that's why Kurt and I and Jody and Corey, when we're meeting with the Department of Finance and the legislative folks, we're saying, it's all public here. You know, there was nothing. This was a here's the council minutes for this particular issue. A lot of it is public. A lot of it is known. So we're working as best we can to sort of overcome this sense that there isn't a lot of information about the branch expenditures there.
And last Friday, in one of our standing meetings with the Department of Finance, we were informed that they're going to want to fool around with how these numbers are displayed, working with the legislature and the Department of Finance, and then getting our input. So from all recollections, it looks like that's going to change at this point in time. So we'll be keeping the council informed about what those changes are going to be and what the purposes might be behind them.
Here's the next page in terms of a piece of information. It's an expenditure of the trial courts, the superior courts. It says, what do we spend? Well, this is the one where it shows both the local revenues being expended and state resources. This comes from Phoenix, loaded by the trial courts. This would be absolutely connecting to our existing systems. No manipulation or adjustment by us, a pure representation of the data that's put in by the trial courts.
On the note of a pure representation, we're going to break for lunch until 1 o'clock back here to continue. Thank you. We're still on item 2.
What is this?
We'll resume. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chief. So when I described what was on that first page of the detailed governor's budget information, I said the budget displays things based on how we spend it. So on this next page that you're looking at, you can see the Supreme Court. So $43.5 million is the Supreme Court's budget. But what's important is where does the money come from? $42.3 million comes from the general fund. So it's a primarily general funded program. We see that the next largest fund is the Appellate Court Trust Fund. It's informing you as a decision maker, as a counsel, where are the resources for the Supreme Court coming from? Well, the Appellate Court Trust Fund has been increased over the last couple of years. There's been some fee increases, and so that is an option. But that still has a maximum that you can. So when we need money for the Supreme Court, we have to look at the general fund. So you as a counsel looking at this information, if you were to go back to your to the hotel tonight and look at this, you'd see, okay, well, what are the options? Where does the money come from for the Supreme Court? Same for the Courts of Appeal. In a $200 million program, that's the size and scope of the Courts of Appeal. They have the same fund sources as the Supreme Court. Then you get to the council budget, and you look at that, and you see that its totals are $150 million for the 13-14 fiscal year. But as a comparison, if you're looking at these 3 years of expenditures, you'd say, well, boy, look at that. In 11-12, what happened? They were at $120 million. Where did that growth come from? People try to understand how numbers change, why did they change, and it's our job to explain that. And this is a very simple explanation in terms of why the Judicial Council budget was $120 in 1 year and goes to almost $150 the next year. And that's because in building the budget in 12-13, the legislature and the Department of Finance thought that it would be better to show a certain amount of expenditure that was managed by the council, by the AOC, rather than from as part of the trial court's costs, part of the AOC's costs. They were statewide IT initiatives, V2, V3 expenditures. They thought that it was, since it was managed by the AOC, that it would be a more appropriate a cost reflected by and in the AOC's budget. And that's our job, is to explain those things to you. But someone would say, well, you got an increase for something. Well, these were all historical costs that had been reflected previously on the trial court side of the ledger. Facilities program, again, before I move on, all of a sudden you look at the council budget and look at as many, many funding sources. And I made a presentation last year about all the different funds that fund the branch. Well, you can see you start getting into a number of these funds do get specific dollars to the AOC, the council budget. We have a large portion is from the general fund. the next, you know, there's some large ones from the Improvement Fund and Modernization Fund, Trial Court Trust Fund. So we have, what we have is we have someone looking at the AOC, the council budget, and saying, well, you're spending Trial Court Trust Fund money. Well, what is that for? Well, that's for the support of the trial courts. There's a, you know, a lot of our programs at the council and the AOC are supporting trial court efforts there. So when someone says, well, how big is your budget? Parts of that also support the Supreme Court Courts of Appeal, the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. We at the council provide resources and services to those other entities, not just to the trial courts. Program 35 is the Judicial Branch Facility Program. That's where we see, and Giselle will talk about this later when we go through the some more of the detail on the funds, but this reflects what is spent on facility modifications. We get money from the counties through the court facility, county facility payments for the maintenance and operations of the facilities. You know, why is there this growth? There are reasons and rationale for that. And at a high level, I think if you know someone wanted to know why that's happened, Giselle could provide that explanation. And it might be worthwhile now just to have you understand why this number is changed.
So, for instance, if you're looking at the State Court Facilities Construction Fund, the detail for the construction fund itself in the facilities program, in fiscal year 11-12, our budget was reduced by $10 million for the facility modification program, as was the immediate and critical needs account. So that money was restored in 12-13, or that appropriation level was restored in 12-13. So that's one of the explanations of why the growth occurred in those two funds within the program.
So next we have obviously the largest single expenditure in the branch is on the next page, Bob, is state trial court funding. And someone might think, well, that's what we spend for the trial courts. But this detail shows you the breakdown of where the money goes. First, we have all the different funding sources, the $809 million of general fund, this $32 million from the Improvement and Modernization Fund. There's a small amount of federal trust fund. We get a little bit of pass-through there. The single largest funding source for the trial court, state trial court funding program is $1.5 billion of trial court trust fund. There's other amounts we get from state agencies for the AB 1058 program. And you can see there that $50 million from the immediate and critical needs account. It was the share that the governor proposed to, on an ongoing basis, fund some portion of the trial court operations. This is where they made a permanent movement of money. They're proposing a permanent movement of money from our construction program to help fund trial court operations. But we now have our first sort of sub-breakdown of a program. So you see 45. Now you want to look at these other numbers, 45-10, further down 45-15, 45-25, 45-35. What we've done is we've further broken down the state trial court funding line items to some important breakouts. Now, the one that's really key is 45-10 is where we get money, as the council allocates money out of that appropriation for your trial court operations. It's what the trial courts rely on. That area is the primary source of funds, and as you can see, it's mostly the general fund, the trial court trust fund, the construction fund, and the improvement and modernization fund. Not many fund sources go purely for trial court operations. We historically had a trial court security, but you know that that's no longer continuing as of the 11-12 fiscal year. Then we have 45-25. Compensation, funds not available to the trial courts but included in this line called the state trial court funding. Judge Jarr was talking about the fact that there's only so many dollars that the trial courts can use to offset cuts. Well, the Department of Finance included in their totals compensation for Superior Court judges.
What was the rationale for that? Because we don't see those money in operations at all, not one penny.
Right. They haven't really.
It's still. I think their perspective, Judge, is that it's still a cost
for trial courts.
Yeah.
Even though you don't see it,
but it's
in your operations.
I mean, it should be at least a separate item. It's deceiving and it's misleading and it's just wrong to put it under operations.
And that's why it's separately identified. From support for operations of trial courts, it's separate. It is, that is, operations money is 4510. That's what they should have been looking at for the historical changes. That would have been the more in analytically honest look at the numbers. But we've worked and explained to them that you can't include the $300 million of compensation. You can't include the next line item, which is assigned judges. You have no control over that other than the services that you need. But those are not dollars that are available to you.
That's why, Judge, I think the chart that was developed by the Trial Court Fund Working Group that breaks out all of the monies for the trial courts by operations, then you've got facilities, judges' salaries, assigned judges, those components that are never transitioned from the state level to the local level.
I know, but so, the problem is we're trying to re-educate people on bad propaganda that has already been put out to the public. So if the Department of Finance would follow acceptable accounting practices and keep these separate, then we wouldn't have to have these misconceptions about our budget with the legislator. It's a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Here's another important issue is the 4545 court interpreters. So our current budget authority, what we can spend in any given year, is $92.8 million. But yet, when you look at the left-hand column, we only spent 90.1. That's an issue. There's an under expenditure of court interpreter funds. We've talked about that issue. There's a lot of going on about that program. So therein lies, you can see exactly what we spent against what we've been budgeted for interpreters, and there's been a gap.
Back with the judges, why is one of them part of it came out of the trust fund? The middle column.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer. I can ask Stephen if he knows the answer to why there was some share was spent out of the trust fund.
Middle
year. That'd be $171 million.
Sorry.
We can get back to you.
I think there wasn't enough general fund to fund all the programs, so that's why
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. So
use a mic.
That's
this fiscal year? Yeah,
12-13. Yeah, the reason why was that this year the general fund was so low, I think it was $260 million. It couldn't even cover all of judges' compensation. So that's what, so fees and fines actually had to kick in to cover some judges' compensation this year.
They so reduced our general fund support that we had to use our own trial court trust fund revenues to cover that.
Excuse me.
Yes.
The question that comes to my mind, and working off the trial court funding work group, and the concept behind the Lockyer Eisenberg law was that was their responsibility. Is that even legal to look to us for a portion of that? I'm not asking you; it's rhetorical for the council. But I'm not sure. Given what little I know about the 1997 Act, it was supposed to be their responsibility for judicial.
We've heard the Department of Finance doesn't look at just the general fund; they look at state funding, and to the extent that they've provided funds through the redirections or, let's say, fee increases, that is state funding that they provided. They don't just focus on the general fund, whereas we would. We would say that's the general tax dollars going to the branch. When they look at state funding, they look at all the resources, even if that means that it's fees or redirections. And then we have 4555 grants. The largest share of that comes from reimbursements from the State Department of Child Support Services, which is on the next top of the next page, the $59, $60 million of reimbursements. That's money that is a general fund to another department. And since they don't want to count the general fund twice, they call it a reimbursement. So it's just a mechanism of where the funds come from. And then next is the budget for the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. They've also had cuts over the last several years. So this area of the budget shows the programs, as I've described, and all the funding sources that come into those funding areas. And so we have limited ability in terms of we can't just create a new fund on our own to fund an area. We have to live within the parameters that are provided to us. And so trial court operations has its four funding sources, the general fund, the trial court trust fund, the improvement and modernization fund, and now $50 million from construction. That's what we're fighting. When we ask for our $125 million back, we're saying don't do that $50 million transfer. Support them with general fund resources. So the next section is a breakdown of those same expenditures that we've just described, but through the people that you hire and the operating expenses that you have for those for that entity, the benefits that you spend, that sort of thing. So these numbers all match what was previously provided and shown above based on the fund source. Now it's how much do you spend on people? How much do you spend on equipment? How much do you spend on benefits? And if there's anything unique and special that you'd like to call out. For example, within the Supreme Court, the court-appointed counsel line item is specifically identified because it's not there to support the staff of the Supreme Court. It's not there to support their normal operating expenses and equipment, which are just rent. They, when they take a cut, they have, while the budget may look large at $43.5 million, $15 million of that is to something they really don't have any control over. So this council has acted in the past when they've distributed cuts is to take, say, that line item out of the budget and reduce the Supreme Court's budget in the view of the entire branch, say, what is really your operational number? And they've taken that line item to try and equalize and fairly compare the different operations of the Supreme Court Courts of Appeal and, say, the trial courts. So, again, I'm not going to go through all of these, but the next this half page and the top of the next page are just all of the breakdowns of the state-level operations for the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, the Council, the Facility Program, and the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. As a state-funded, state operation, this is a required section of the budget that we have to show. And so we are breaking out the data, and you can then find out how much of the council budget is spent on staff versus operating expenses and equipment. And they all add up to the totals. The next section is now how do we as a branch get our money from a legal view? What are the legal appropriations? So when we talk about the Budget Act, you can see under the general fund, there is a $332 million General Fund Budget Act appropriation. It would be specifically identified in the Budget Act, and you could trace that. And if there's any adjustments to any of those numbers, there is some legal authority to make that adjustment. We can't just ask for money. There has to be some authority for us to do that. And so it's very clean when you look at the 13-14 because they propose a number. But when you start to actually implement that, as Kurt said, you're managing creating a budget year number. You then, when you get the budget, you're managing and administering it in the current year. And when you're finally done, you see all the variety of changes that were done to that general fund appropriation for the state operations. And you can see there's many, many more entries under the 11-12 column. All those have to go through the Department of Finance and, if necessary, to the legislature, depending on what is required. But no adjustments can be made without their approval. So as we go through this, each item, each fund has a legal basis from which we can spend. So you'll see many of them just say Budget Act appropriation. Adjustment per Section 3.60 has to do with a section of the Budget Act related to retirement costs. There are adjustments that are made to retirement that are made to state agencies, state agency budgets. And so these pages here are all related to what we call the state operations, the state-level function of the judicial branch. Many, many funds, court interpreter fund, family law trust fund. We've gone through those in detail in terms of the revenue sources and the expenditures. These are all laid out. So you can see exactly where we get our authority to spend money. It's not just our creation. It's a work with the Department of Finance and the legislature to establish that spending authority. And then you get to LJE 13, which is what, page Bob, that finally gets to the local assistance. Yes, there. Now we're talking about what we're spending at the local level, at the trial court level, all of the appropriations that are included in the budget that we now have, what's the legal authority to spend for the trial courts. So there's differing appropriations in the budget. When we move to, we're going to have an issue tomorrow on benefit funding. And when the state stopped doing SAL for us, and we asked them to now start funding our benefits separately, they decided that way they wanted transparency, they were going to separately appropriate our benefits line. And so you can see on the top right corner, there is a $71.5 million number. That's the amount that the state's general fund is providing for our benefit, retirement and health benefit cost increases. It's an effort of transparency from their perspective. So again, these are all the funds that go to support the local assistance, the trial court costs, as shown here. Are there any questions? I've gone on right after lunch, and I'm going to make sure everybody's... if there are any questions thus far. Okay, so we've talked about the legal basis of the expenditure. Now we have a whole section of the budget, which is very important from our perspective, and I think it would be from your perspective as well. They're called the fund condition statements, and Kurt talked about these fund conditions. Your balance sheet, your checkbook account, money in the account, and what you're going to be spending out of. And so So here, this almost full page of this particular page is the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund. It is the newly created fund that the legislature did where they merged the Improvement Fund and the Modernization Fund. They said, for greater transparency, we're not pulling money out from different funds. It's all seen in one fund, transparently, clearly, and so we can track it. So what this shows is, what your sort of your beginning checking account amount is at the beginning of each year, all the different revenues that you get in it, obviously under revenues and where we get money in, and in this case the improvement fund has is now permanently, as recommended by the budget working group and affirmed by the council, we're moving $20 million on an annual basis out of the improvement fund to support trial court operation. It was one of the concepts of backfilling cuts. Well, in a few years, we're going to have a problem with the improvement and modernization fund because the fund balance, as you see, is going to become very, very small. And in fact, just from this display, it shows there about what, four fifths down, Bob, that we had a $40 million fund balance at the end of the 11-12 fiscal year, reducing down to 12-13's $29.6 million, down to $99,000. Now, the reason and don't be alarmed as to why that is what it is, because we have an amount, a credit limit, an expenditure limit, but we have never spent all of that. So while we fully show that credit limit expended, we don't actually use it. We make sure that we're monitoring our revenues and monitoring our expenditures so that we never get to the point where we've actually overspent that particular fund. But what it does show is that we will have a problem at some point in the next 2 or 3 years of that particular fund. And we're going to have to make some important choices as a council because there's very important programs funded out of the IMF. The statewide local area network, wide area network is funded out of that. How are we going to manage? Because there's a lot of tech out of there. There's education programs. Some of my staff are funded out of the Improvement and Modernization Fund. At some point, we're going to have a discussion of a subgroup of the budget working group to really look at that long-term health of that particular fund. And that's an important council issue for you because you're going to probably have to decide that some programs will have to cease.
It's just the nature of the revenues and the expenditures. But we want to make sure we've gone through and done our due diligence to provide you the best information when you make those decisions.
Zonko, if I can ask a question. One of the biggest expenditures that was moved into that fund was the support of the Phoenix program, because that was previously, a drawdown from each of the trial court allocation. And one of the observations that we had in previous conversations is that, as you said, it's a very fee-driven fund. And because of the workload reductions that we've all sustained, it's not necessarily it will grow as workload grows. Is that a fair assessment? Maybe not sufficient. Mm-hmm. Maybe sufficient. We just don't know at this point. But that's clearly a consideration that we're going to have to contemplate going forward. If it's something that we fully move into that account, or maybe offset it with something
right,
else.
Right, and the budget working group recommended to the council that be done on one time so that we could evaluate its ability to manage that. Now, if that's a priority expenditure, that means that something lower on the ledger will have to be reduced. But that's what we will work through with the budget working group and come to the council with options as to how to manage this particular fund, which funds many, many, many programs, complex litigation management.
And Chief, this is Kurt Soderlin. those are going to be some very hard conversations, because by my recollection, somewhere between 55 and 60% of the expenditures from the IMF are for technology purposes. And some of those services that are currently provided to the trial courts are absolutely critical. The Land WAN, as an example, is the number one tech expenditure from the trial court's perspective. So, again, those are going to be some hard discussions we're going to have.
Any more questions before I move on? So this is why these documents, you know, they are living and important documents and provide information. And as we go forward and when we present information to the budget working group, we use these to show the published, you know, approved document numbers. So it's important we're always tying to what it is that's presented.
One last comment. This is Kurt Soderlin again, about the fund condition statements. This is an area that receives an awful lot of scrutiny by the Legislative Analyst's Office as well as the Department of Finance. They are constantly looking at the status of the fund conditions and looking at the revenues and the expenditures. And I think a little bit later on, Giselle's going to be talking about mm-hmm. that too.
And let's turn to the page 17, which shows the fund condition of the trial court trust fund. And it's a fairly lengthy one. It has many, many revenues coming into it, and also has transfers. If you see in the middle of the page under transfers and adjustments, this is where we get to see all those one-time fixes, that where we've taken money from the modernization fund, we've taken money from construction fund, we've taken money from the immediate and critical needs fund to continue to support. This is where the council actions have been reflected in the budget. We would not have the level of revenues in the trial court trust fund if it weren't for these kinds of transfers, because the general fund amount has been reduced over the past several years. But this is where everything is shown, all the money in and all the money out. Now, again, we in Fiscal Services Office, we're working, and we have to manage the cash in this fund so that we can make the distributions out of this fund to the trial courts. We have to make sure that we're getting the revenues timely. We're working with the trial courts for their cash needs. We use the cash balance in this trial court trust fund to provide cash advances to trial courts that need them. So it's a critical piece of information that is published once a year, and it provides you all of the known revenues and expenditures out of the fund. And we, again, manage that authority. We've talked to you, Council, about the credit limit that we have and what we assume we have expenditures are for. And at one point, the Budget Working Group had identified almost $60 million of revenues that we could help offset trial court cuts with. And I think I discussed with you the fact that there's a certain amount of sort of credit limit we have that we can use, and then above that we have to go to the Department of Finance. That's what we're managing, and we never want to fully utilize that right out the gate, all of that authority, because there might be something that's unforeseen that we want you, council, to have authority to spend that money on. And we're going to be bringing something to you tomorrow regarding benefits where we're going to want to use some of that authority to help fill a hole because the Department of Finance didn't fully fund our benefit costs. So, you know, you don't want to spend your money right out the gate. You want to leave a little bit of room. Other questions?
Where does the adjusted beginning balance come from?
That is our. We're tracking the revenues and the expenditures, and when we close the books at the end of the fiscal year, we know based on our accounting what's left in the trial court trust fund.
And it has shrunk so considerably that you keep stealing from it.
Well, because of the lack of general fund support, until we've had to use that trial court trust fund and spent it down. But revenues also fluctuate, and there's been a bit of a revenue drop, and Giselle's going to see that also on our construction side. We share the trial court trust fund shares similar revenue flows into the fund. So partly we're spending, and also partly there's been a pay cut to the trial court trust fund because there's not been as much general fund coming in. I think this might be a good time for Giselle to talk about the construction program, because that in and of itself is an important issue that I want you to understand in terms of the revenues and the expenditures and the ins and the outs and the takings and the transfers and what it's meant to that program.
Thank you, Zlatko. So I would like to just share some of the information with you on the facility funds and the challenges the facility program faces as we try to juggle the various redirections. This year, we've had to go back to the court facilities working groups on several different occasions to determine how the various redirections would impact the program. First, we went back to the court facilities working group to determine how the $50 million ongoing redirection that was identified in the fiscal year 12-13 budget, how that would impact our program. And as a result of that redirection, we determined that through the review and analysis of the fund condition, that it would be reduce the program by 7 projects. And then we had to go back again and look at how Long Beach would impact the program. And Long Beach, we were notified in November that Long Beach, funding the Long Beach program would not be a general fund expense as originally envisioned, but would be directed to the SB 1407 immediate and critical needs account. So that was $34 million in fiscal year 13-14, but that expense grows to approximately $61 million on average annually. And so that was another 7 projects that we had to look, or another 4 projects that we had to look at reducing, Sacramento being one of the largest projects. Then we also, when the governor's budget came out again, yet again, we were, you know, back at a point where we had to rethink what we would be submitting for a 13-14 fiscal year budget package for the construction program, because we were informed that $200 million was going to be swept from the immediate and critical needs account, or was proposed in the governor's budget. So again, we had to go back to the court facilities working group, and that is an action that you will be seeing tomorrow at the council meeting to consider, and the impact of that to the program, which may be a delay in projects. So with all of these redirections, you know, we have to, whenever we prepare a budget package, we have to look at the funding of the program and prepare a fund condition statement, not only on this 3-year snapshot that you see in the governor's budget, but we have to prepare a fund condition statement that will project throughout the life of the debt service payments that once we sell lease revenue bonds to finance the construction phase, which will be a 25-year snapshot. So with our budget request, we have to send the fund condition that shows this long-term snapshot and project expenditures, which at the time were uncertain of what our actual expenditures are going to be, because we are making estimates on what the interest rate of bonds will be sold at. So we're, you know, projecting what our bond rate will be. We're projecting what those costs will be for the construction projects and making assumptions there. We are projecting revenues. So revenues are changing over time, which we're seeing this year. Our revenues actually appear to be going down again, which is unfortunate because that changes the long-term picture of the program as well. We're making many assumptions in our fund condition that it's a moving target. And so, and although it may appear that we have some significant balances in our fund conditions, those monies are being planned for construction of new programs or being planned for facility modifications for existing court facilities in a long-term picture. So the legislature, the Department of Finance, and those that look at the governor's three-year window, they don't really see or understand the full impact of the decisions that may be made because those monies are committed to the program in a long-term view. And so we continue to share this information with the Legislative Analyst Office, with the Department of Finance, with the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, with the legislature, with anyone that will listen, because we do have to educate. We have to make certain that all of the external parties and our internal parties, the internal branch, understand the impact to the sweeping of funds and redirection of funds, because there is a continued impact, and so we are often changing and, you know, working with these moving targets. So I just, if you have questions on the fund condition, I'd be glad to discuss any of the questions you might have, but just wanted to know that there are many parts and moving pieces and parts that impact what you see and what you may not see as part of this view.
Giselle?
Yes.
How do we know that the funds are going down? You mentioned that we know that the funds are going down again. And how was that determined?
So we receive, our finance division in our fiscal services office, they prepare, they record or identify all of the collections on a monthly basis. And so, you know, we receive collections 2 years in arrears. So 2 months, excuse me, 2 months in arrears. That is a very good clarification. So 2 months in arrears. And so we have reports as of January which show collections as of November that indicate we're missing our target for this fiscal year. And so we're looking at each of the, and we identify the collections by the type, by the category of collection. So it could be parking fees. It could be the criminal penalties. We're looking at the detail. And we're about, 4% in some areas, 5% in some. Maybe it's only 1%. And also parking is still going up, which is, you know, contrary to what I'm hearing. But we just continue to look at that and monitor that and have to, and we'll be adjusting. Last year, you know, the immediate critical needs account is a young fund. That the collections began in 2009, excuse me. And so we only have one real complete year, 2010, that is a good snapshot. 2011, there was amnesty. So that is not a good year for us to look at because the last 6 months, it's distorted. So then we were making projections last year on what we would collect this year, and unfortunately, you know, we continue to go down and we didn't expect that. So we just, you know, we'll be looking at that and continue to look at that. So.
Does it feel like a light bulb's going on or not when in these education of the Department of Finance, because my concern is, and I'm sure that many share this, comments that Judge O'Malley gave, that there's a lot of misinformation, and I'm not sure how much of this is crisis management on the part of DOF, so they're going to suck us dry regardless, or how much of it is the effort to overhaul us for the long run, and so that we look at things differently or we budget things differently. It's almost as if I'm not really sure, and I don't know if you have a sense of what it is, of whether this is we've got a big statewide deficit period, and we need to fill that with some money, and you all have money, so we're going to take that, and or whether it is some other overplay, or maybe it's a little of both. But I know everybody's working really hard to educate them, including the chief going herself and doing this, and I'm wondering what's happening. Is the light going on? Is anyone understanding this, or is this going to continue to be the press for us regardless? I know that's a very difficult question to answer, but I'm curious to get a gauge of this, a sense.
So I'll give my two cents. This is Kurt Silverland, Chief, if that's okay.
Of course. Two cents we'll take. Anything
you
have.
So the standing meetings that we've talked about that Jody Corey and Zalakwa and I attend, it's very clear over the course of the last, in particular, 9 months, that finance has gotten more and more of an education. I will say, even though we don't have a solution yet, that on the cash flow issues tied to the discussion that we had last Friday, that they are very concerned about that. And I think we have to press home those stories and the fact that there seems to be some waffling at, and this I say with a big grain of salt, from the Department of Finance on concerns about cash flow and our ability to meet payroll, and the Legislative Analyst Office has identified that as an issue that we'll be talking about very briefly shortly. So there is, in my sense, some movement there. I think what we're trying to demonstrate here is that for all our various funds, you're getting the tip of the iceberg, and it's what's going on underneath the water where each of these funds, we have to look at the expenditure patterns for every single one of them and the revenue sources. As an example, for the IMF, one of the areas that's down in terms of revenue is traffic tickets. So each of those funds, this is where you have financial staff here that devote a lot of time to protect ourselves and also to be able to second-guess the Legislative Analyst Office or the Department of Finance if we think there's something wrong with their projections or their estimates. And that's why I said the LAO and the Department of Finance and ourselves, we pay an awful lot of attention to this issue. And in terms of cash flow issues, we're starting to see little bits of that. As Zlatko had indicated, that we have made some cash advances to courts. There was a Northern California court about a week ago that did not have enough revenue to pay their bills on a particular day, so we had to hold up on having us pay their bills out of Phoenix until the next day when the revenue was going to be sufficient for the checks to clear the bank.
Judge Herman?
Yeah, just follow up on that, Kurt, because I think most of us at the trial court level, we're looking at a need of right around 12% in order to just carry the float. So mechanically, given that we're nearly one fiscal year into the 1% local fund balance, where mechanically, if the DOF shifted its position, would we come up with funding to accommodate a fund balance that's going to allow us to carry the float? I guess that's my question.
All right. So there's a cash issue here that still exists, and that we can analytically come to an agreement with the Department of Finance that if you don't recall, 12.01% was something finance and TCAS staff worked on, that's the figure we would need just to be able to keep the lights on. That's nothing for infrastructure or any of the other major technology projects, as an example. So part of our discussions with finance is at least to get them to, almost from an academic perspective, agree to the 12.01%, and then we have to continue to work on the cash issues.
Judge Jarr?
To go back to what Judge Ellsworth referenced concerning the construction revenue streams that Giselle has been discussing, it's kind of hard to conceptualize, but basically when 1407 was enacted, the legislature specified increases in penalty assessments that would be devoted to court construction per $10 a fine. For those of us who have ever done traffic calendars and misdemeanor calendars, you're having to always get your fines and penalty assessments just right, because the breakout is so complicated. That happened on the occasion of 1407, and there's also a filing fee component. So all of a sudden, like that, there's a revenue stream. And in 1407, as Giselle says, we're still trying to assess what a normal, typical revenue stream is going to be, because amnesty resulted in an artificial spike, old fines finally collected. But it's something akin to $300 million a year. And now that's before permanent redirections occurred. We have now had two. A couple of years ago, $40 million was scored as being permanently redirected to trial court operations. The proposed budget from the governor this year has Long Beach permanently going into the ICNA column, meaning that the debt service, and I'm going to use that term loosely because it's structured in a way that has different defining terms, but that's basically what it is, which is 30-some-odd million for this year because it's a partial fiscal year when the building actually is completed and begins to run and the dollars are owed, to all the later years when there's a gradual increase and it gets up to about $60 million. Those are dollars spoken for, and they're gone from that revenue stream. So you have $300 million, assuming it's a reliable number. Now it's $200 million, and we're building projects. And as each project is completed, a chunk of that revenue stream is yanked to pay back the bonds that were floated to build the building. So with each new building, more and more and more of the revenue stream is committed. And so Giselle's task, which is monumentally complicated, is to both keep an eye on revenue trends to the extent that peace officers are pulled off the street because they're not enforcing traffic for budget reasons. It's not that people stop rolling through stop signs. They just don't get tagged for it. So the fines go down, or the fees go down, the assessments on the fines. To the extent the population grows or peace officers are put back on the street, perhaps it grows. So there are factors relative to the revenue side. The expenditure side, you have to keep track of it. Think of a long continuum, and it gradually just ratchets up and ratchets up. Theoretically, you get to the point where your entire revenue stream has been encumbered or committed, as you built so many courthouses. You remember when 1407 first went into place, it was several billions of dollars of court construction that it would service. Well, it's in that fashion that it's serviced. So anytime funds are pulled away, not just temporarily, 1 year, but forever or scored as such, that has a huge impact on how many buildings can ultimately be built. The impact of Long Beach, for example, at maxed out $60 million a year is much, much more harmful to the overall health of the construction program than the $200 million that's being proposed for one-time redirection this year. The effect of that, even in accumulation with a year or two running doing the same thing, is to retard your program of replacing desperately needed court facilities. But to score dollars as permanently redirected is to take a huge chunk of the ability to buy buildings away for good. So those are the reasons why we're especially interested in the previous steps that were taken and the proposed step that is on the table relative to permanent redirections. So all along, before we can periodically file the giant Bible full of materials that we sign, we're good for it, so that a bond issue can be floated, we have to demonstrate that revenue stream is solid and can cover that new increment of bonded indebtedness that will take 25 years to pay out or more.
And this is Judge O'Malley. Just as an aside, the Court Order Debt Task Force has realized that the burden on the courts to receive all these funds from these traffic tickets and to divide up into all the proper buckets where the money goes is extremely burdensome on the courts, very labor-intensive. These are funds that all the different buckets have been designated to us by the legislature. We didn't come up with these buckets. We didn't decide all these different funds that have nothing to do with running a red light as to where the monies need to go, as to all these assessments that have been added on to somebody who runs a red light. And the amount of labor and the time for each of our court staffs to try and designate into the right area where these funds go is a tremendous burden upon the court, and really something that we would love to share with others. Hope that others, you know, who have placed these burdens on us could share in that burden. But that's another aspect of it. It's a whole side issue of how we give all these other entities the money that they so desperately need, and it's all on the courts. The onus is on the courts.
Justice Baxter.
Well, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Maybe Mary or Debbie would be able to help, or Kurt, with your experience. But is there any way for a legislature that creates a fund, let's say 1407, to preclude a later legislature from raiding that fund for an ulterior purpose?
Yeah. And Zlotko can help out on this. You know, what they do is it's a sleight of hand, in that
they give you that much less.
Or they backfill it from another source is the issue. It's not a direct reduction, as an example, to the general fund. They backdoor it.
Well, on page 9, LJ 19, under the immediate and critical needs account, towards the bottom it shows expenditures, and it shows a line called local assistance, and there's $240 million in the 12-13 column and then $50 million in 13-14. They changed the law that said that the money that's being deposited in the ICNA, the immediate and critical needs account, can be used to support trial court operations. So while it was created for construction, they changed the law saying that it now is available for expenditure on the trial court.
Is that budget language or statutory?
Statutorily changed the law saying that it is able to be used for that purpose.
What if the 1407 legislation specifically said that this legislation and the funds are dedicated to courthouse construction, and unless the judicial branch agrees otherwise, it shall remain as courthouse construction. Would that do any good?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think, you know, there's a potential it could result in a further reduction to the courts, because the way it's done is
elsewhere.
From trial court operations, you make a reduction, then from ICNA, you backfill. So the ICNA money is still staying in the branch, but it's the general fund that goes away.
And they see the nature of many of these revenues are already flow into the general fund, and so notwithstanding their increases or adjustment, they see them as also able to go to the general fund, even if they go to this construction fund. This, like a penalty assessment, also funds general fund programs. So I think that they're looking at the law and making it work budgetarily for them.
Judge Kaufman.
You know, maybe Kurt can help me on this one, because when we got 1407 passed, it wasn't a bond issue. We couldn't get the votes for a bond issue, so we got legislation to fund it this way. The problem I have is that as a trial judge, I say to somebody, by the way, the ICNA fee, which is $30 or $35, depending on the charge, will go to courthouse construction. And now I'm saying, oh, by the way, that's not true anymore. It's going to go to fund the operations. I think it's a bait and switch, and it's not right. How do you fund the court? I'm funding the courts on your back, basically, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right. So some of the money stays here, some goes somewhere else. that's the reason we couldn't get, if it was tied to a bond issue, if we got enough votes, they couldn't do it. Is that correct?
Well, that's not quite how the structure would work. You have to actually, you know, authorize the revenue and then build up the revenue. And as your projects moved out, then that's when you would bond your project. So that's essentially why we had to get it in that order and got the authorization for $5 billion. I guess one other thing to keep in mind that's important on the 1407 is, you know, initially I think our $5 billion was based on about $280 million in revenue. It's, for a couple of years, the revenue got up about $315 million, which gave us an opportunity to redirect some of those dollars to court operations as we were going along. So it worked to our benefit along the way, too. We had some extra revenue to help keep courts open. It's sort of now when we've got to the point that they're doing the permanent redirections of the $50 million this year and the proposed $50 million plus for Long Beach in the upcoming year, that creates, I think, the problem. I think, and the short answer, Justice Baxter, is no, they can change the law anytime they want on where the revenue goes. And so one legislature can say, this is where we want the revenue to go, and another legislature can change that, just as they did, as Zocco pointed out, changing the law this year to redirect it. The part that got, I think, difficult and was a bit questionable was the fact that the revenue was raised on a majority vote for 1407. And that's because there was a nexus between fees and fines and courthouses and court construction. When you redirect that into the general fund, well, that starts looking a lot like a tax on two-thirds vote. And so the first year they just did a swap, and I think there was some real questionable authority on that. It wasn't challenged. But the way that they can, I think, effectively get around that is by directing the fees and fines to court operations, which they did, which is there's a clear nexus to that, and then backing out the general fund for court operations. So you've got a nexus. I think that probably makes it constitutional in that sense if you're looking at the two-thirds, but you are in that circumstance where you've been raising fees and fines.
But also, Kurt, isn't it correct to say that the effort to pass SB 1407 included a coalition of interests, including the civil bar, plaintiff and defense, who agreed to the fee increases because it was going to a specific purpose that they never intended to be funding a general fund third branch operation?
I think that's exactly right, Chief. I mean, the court construction piece of that was really not the hard part. The revenue 1407 was the hard part. And I think there was strong agreement with all of the stakeholders on increasing that for construction. I don't think we would have ever seen it for any other purpose, as you point out, if that's how it had been put out before. And again, it probably would have been a different, required a different vote, a two-thirds vote.
And you have to be aware that this is not lost on the legislature now as we speak, what has occurred. You remember I was talking about how you essentially exploit that revenue stream as you build each building. More money gets encumbered, as it were, to pay the next mortgage in line, so to speak. It just happens that our financial crisis occurred at a time early in the maturity of the program rather than late in the maturity of the program, when we would have had any number of different bond issues that we would be applying dollars to repay. So there was this, I hate to say it, juicy stream of revenue, which could be redirected by the enactment of a budget trailer bill which changes the law that says henceforth X number of dollars that goes into this fund will now be repurposed for court operations. Kurt and Jody and I have had several discussions about this, and we're persuaded that that the steps that were taken to redirect those dollars were grounded in the motivation that we have to find dollars. There was nothing more complicated than that, and there was a revenue stream, much of which was unencumbered, if you will, and they saw an opportunity to use it to address their budget woes. But now it's aggregated, it's accumulated, and it truly does endanger, not just in the near term, but more importantly, the long-term projects. And all of a sudden, projects are being curtailed or proposed to be curtailed, and that's occurring in some legislative districts that are sensitive places. And now there's a pullback in terms of what the implications are. So we're in a position where we can, I think, change the narrative on that.
Judge Kaufman?
Kurt, and taking Justice Baxter's question one step further, SB 1407 was based on a certain amount of money. In other words, we gained $5 billion, and we thought we'd raise $280 million a year, something like that. So how do we tie in if they would guarantee us at least $280 million a year without any pullbacks? The other side of the equation is if we raise more than that, how do we get to keep it is what we'd like to say, but obviously that may be a problem. But how do we get a certain revenue stream that we can count on to build courthouses?
So you don't. Okay. Exactly. This is the long and the short. I mean, you can get it established, and the next legislature can do something different. But again, just a reminder that, you know, that was helpful to us when the revenue was coming in. We were very conservative in putting together our revenue estimates for 1407 because, you know, we were building on a target. We had 41 projects that we wanted to fund at that point, and we wanted to make sure that we were going to have the revenue, so we were very conservative. So as it came in higher, you know, we had the opportunity, after having discussions with several of our stakeholders, we had the opportunity to redirect that dollars again. So it was helpful, certainly for court operations, and at the same time, we were able to keep our commitment to the 41 projects. It's just when it started getting deeper than that, and you put on top of that the loans, recall, you know, $350 million out of the 1732 and $90 million out of SB 1407 on top of it, starts getting to what Giselle lays out as the problem, is your fund balance being able to support for the next 30 years your projects.
Jim Fox.
Yeah, the basic concept of law is that a legislature cannot commit prior or subsequent legislators to anything relative to statutes. The only way you're going to establish permanent funding without the legislature being able to change it would be by initiative, where the language of the initiative specifically says that cannot be changed absent a vote of the electorate, or to amend the Constitution.
The power of the tax.
Judge Ellsberg.
So I think that part of our responsibility then, starting with the trial court budget working group as well as the judicial council, is, as you said, Steve, we have to be responsive in terms of sometimes we just have to get the dollars to just keep our doors open. But our long-term view has to also be that we can't keep shifting and doing the one-time money in a responsiveness either, because what it does is confuse the Department of Finances as well as the trial courts and everybody else involved as to what the true amounts that need to be used and funded in certain ways. And I understand the complexity of it, but as we make each one of these decisions as we go forward, listening to trial court budget working group and their recommendations, I think there will be times that we are pressed to do what's popular or to fund something or to help somebody out that seems like they're in a crisis. But we have to have a long view of this as well, even in the providence that we've exercised. And that is my concern, that we do see emergencies all around us. I mean, the walls are falling down, quite literally, or we're not able to build walls to have any shelter. But I think we have to have a responsibility to the health of the branch in the long run, understanding that these are not just the delicate times that we're in now. We have to look at the future. And I think it's going to be very difficult for us to turn some things away and to stop some programs or start not allow for activities, but it has to be in the long view that we're taking a look at this. And I think it's going to be incredibly hard, but we have to be responsible, I think.
Thank you, Kurt Child.
Since we're getting close to our firewall here, Let me just draw your attention real quickly to a couple of other documents. So one is the LAO's review of the criminal justice proposals.
Can you say what page you're on?
If you're following along at your desk, on your PDF, it's page 125.
Thank you.
It is attachment H, which in Moodle on the PDF is page 125.
So this is a document that the LAO produces that goes beyond just the judiciary. It looks at the criminal justice issues. When you get a chance to review this particular document, there's quite a few portions of it that is devoted to the Department of Corrections, or CDCR, at this point in time. They do talk about the judiciary and the need to reduce expenditures based upon the governor's proposed fund balance of the 1%. Just a different perspective. Judge Dara has talked about how the general fund accounted for 56% of support for the branch in 8-9, which is page 8 or 9, and now it's down to 20%. A different way to look at that is since 8-9 to now, our general fund has had a reduction of 64%. That's a very substantial reduction for the branch. The document also talks about the impact of efficiencies. There are going to be a total of at least 17 efficiencies eventually included in next year's budget to make operations go better, fee increases, and other ways of ongoing reductions. There's a reference that the LAO has put into that document that specifically calls out the trial court fund working group and what the outcome of that might be. This is where the LAO also honed in on the cash flow as issues for the branch, specifically looking at two examples, one that's been mentioned before, and that is payroll and what the implications are for that and just being able to pay the bills. And they have a special second section in there that also talks about the implications for the ICNA account also. So that's a broad overview. It's an easy read. This is where, again, you've seen this chart before that talked about what has happened historically to the general fund support for the branch. The other document, and I'll go real quickly since we're running out of time, is there's an LAO overview of the governor's budget. This is a broad spectrum, so this is at 10,000 feet, and they hone in greatly on revenue and expenditures. This is where they also talk about the governor's office is projecting a $1 billion reserve. And again, what's important is there's another $1 billion that's been set aside for contingencies and emergencies. So this document also, at a broad level, talks about policy initiatives, again, heavily on economic forecasts, and talks about a wide range of issues. So both these documents are good reads, but they're very informative, and just wanted a good read, I guess, based upon your perspective of what you're reading or what it's telling you. But that gives an overview, and we wanted at least leave 5 minutes or so for other questions that might have come up. We'll be supplying you with hard copies of all these documents, all these attachments, as a follow-up to today's meeting.
If I may, Kurt, just there were two topics that I wanted to touch on quickly. Part of this discussion was to also talk about trial court allocation history, and what I wanted probably to remind you is that while we have generally, as a council, allocated that core funding for the trial courts on a pro rata basis, there were years when we got Sal in 2005, the state appropriations limit, there were funds that were distributed using RAS. That you're going to be hearing about. So it's not been an absolute pro rata distribution. And the reason this is important, because we're going to be looking at the work of the funding work group and what Judge Earl's subcommittee is working on, just that this council has at times used something other than pro rata to provide increases. And, in fact, I believe there was a year or two where some small courts were shielded from cuts using the RAS model. And finally, we are working on our AOC budget improvement process. We have a subcommittee working on how we can improve ours, taking the recommendations of the SEC and also looking at how we can make it more transparent for our AOC budget process as well.
Thank you. Any further questions or comment? Thank you. This was very helpful. The graphs. I mean, I've downloaded it into Dropbox just to have it for reference instead of all the different files that I have budgets and budget update issues. And I know what you provided and what you went over was just really skimming the surface, but I found it very helpful, as always, when we get into these discussions. So thank you very much. I know it took a lot of time to prepare, and you started from ground zero. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Well, Stan, we'll take a break until 2:30. Thank you.